And everybody talks about the lost weekend, but exactly how long was the lost weekend and how long were you with John?
We were together for over a year and a half. And John didn't have another way of describing it once, in a sense, we split. So when he was back at the Dakota, it was like, what should you call it? Because people kept throwing it in his face about the fact that he was drunk. So that's why, you know, he used the words the lost weekend, because he kept saying, why is it they were always writing about me? I'm tired of getting drunk and waking up and saying I'm drunk in the morning. So that was his way of doing it. And, you know, John was always good at his words. But if you read about it, it's only like once, you know, a couple of times or whatever. And it was the boys going out. We did party in L.A. But, you know, John didn't like to be drunk every night. John was the new kid on the block, and everybody wanted to see the new kid get into trouble. And they, you know, if you think about it, you go out to the Troubadour, they get drunk, you know, here's Harry starting it. But who are they really looking for? And they keep dredging up the same one over and over. It wasn't like that in our house. We were only, we didn't have a drunken brawl every night. It was just perceived that way.
I want to take all the new singers. Carol. And the other one, and the nipples. I want to take them, hold them tight. All them people that James Taylor had. I wanna suck your nipples, baby. Whenever I'm so tired, don't you ever think I'm gonna sit here and cry. Even if my body should tell me so, darling, I would never, never, never let you go. Because you think you're so smart, just because you think you break my heart, because I let your mind tell me so. Well, now listen, darling, I'd never let you go. Well, you think you're so smart, breaking everybody's heart. I need some excuse to do this. I need relief from my obligations. Just because you're so sweet, just a little cocaine will set me right on my feet. Whenever I'm so blue, yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, I don't mean baby. You know I like it, just like my mama and my papa used to do. I like the same old way. It's go for the head, the top. Hey, I know you love me.
Well, being in parties where it's full of people who have got the shiniest shoes or the biggest heels or the funniest glasses or the biggest hat. Now, I can't get on with that scene. I just met David Bowie, who they call Bowie in America, David Bowie, who I know Ringo also thinks is great.
So do I.
Okay, John does too. Now, you know, I don't have any concepts of whether he's great or not great, but I met him in Memphis, and he was in the shower room with the band just before we went on to the second show. I had to pull John's glasses up and say, let's have a look, let's see where you're at. David Bowie, I said these are my very words, and I hope he wasn't offended by it, because all I really meant was what I said, which was, I pulled his hat up from over his eyes and said, hi man, how are you, you know, nice to meet you, pulled his hat off his eyes and said, you know, do you mind if I have a look at you to see what you are, because I've only ever seen those dopey pictures of you. I mean, every picture I've ever seen of David Bowie or Elton John, they just look stupid to me.
I thought he looked great.
Well, I think he looks dopey.
Were you there when John recorded with Bowie the song Fame?
Of course. It was funny because I was there when they started to write. We came down to listen to Bowie as he was in the, finishing up Across the Universe. And he had this riff, you know, he was talking to Carlos, and he says, oh, I have a riff that I really want to do something with. And he played it for Carlos in another, you know, like in the lounge area of the studio. And he goes, okay, let's go check something out. So they started playing, and Bowie was left to himself, and then he realized like 45 minutes later that nobody's sitting there. And he says, oh, I was looking for you guys, and what's going on? He says, well, I have this idea, and it's, you know, it's a riff that I heard out of Shame, Shame, Shame from Shirley Company. You know, I'm trying to make a song out of that. You know, it's a good riff. And so they started to make it. And Bowie says, oh, do you have any lyrics? He says, no. He goes, well, do you mind if I do something? He goes, no. And he comes back like 25 minutes later with some lyrics.
Saw a UFO on the roof of your apartment building.
Where we live, we were just the two of us, and it was at night, and he just gets up, and he wanders out to the terrace, and he's nude. Here's the best part. He's nude, and he's just sitting, he's puffing on a cigarette, and he's out there taking in the water, because we overlooked the East River, and it was a beautiful, clear night, and he looks out, and he sees light shining. And he says, oh, it must be billboard lights, you know, that type of shiny light. And then he went, you know, I live in a residential area. What kind of light are these? And as he looked up, he saw this thing that was coming right over his head without noise, not far above him, and it was one red light, and it was white lights going on and off around the rim. And it was just very strange. So he just took it in, and he said, he knew it was a UFO because there was no noise coming out of it. It was just going down very slow over his head. And at that moment, he's calling out to me. I'm in the other room trying to get some clothes on myself. And all of a sudden, he's yelling, now. And I went, oh, God, something happened. And I ran. And now there are two people out there in their birthday suit. And I'm going, what do you want? And I stopped mid-sentence, and I go, what is that? He goes, you're seeing what I'm seeing.
A 1, 2, 3, 4. Everybody's talking, no one says a word. Everybody's making love, no one really cares. There's Nazis in the bathroom, just below the stairs. Always something happening, nothing going on. There's always something cooking, nothing in the pot. They're starving back in China, so finish what you got.
I'd like to ask you about another character. It was Morris Levy.
Oh, my God.
Morris sues John over the use of a Chuck Berry song that John used.
Well, he used a line out of it. It was "Here Come Old Flat Top" was the line. You know, we were about to have that just thrown out of court because you need 8 bars of music from somebody else before they really can say you're stealing. But we were right now at the midst of getting Phil Spector to do the rock and roll album. So we were caught in the middle. It was like the lawyers want you to come home, but we're saying, but we have Phil Spector for the next album. So what do we do? And then finally John says, listen, I don't want to lose Phil for the project, which was perfect for really for him. And he said, could you just settle it? And that's how it came about.
And the settlement was?
Was to do 3 songs from Morris's catalog that he owned.
And then Morris releases an unauthorized John Lennon album.
Basically, the tape that Morris had was John being of good faith, you know, said, here, I'm really doing this. Here's a copy of unfinished, unmixed songs, so you could hear that we've done it, you know, so you can hear some of the songs that we're going to include. And of course, Morris wanted to do the telemarketing type thing.
Right.
I mean, in that sense, you give it to Morris. I mean, he was ahead of his time for that stuff. But as we said to Morris, we still have to check with Capitol. I'm still signed to Capitol. I can't just say, oh, yeah, let's do it. Now, if Capitol says yes, that's a different story. So Morris knew that it wasn't going to happen. It just wasn't going, you know, Capitol wasn't going to give it up.
Just like heaven, being here with you. I know Mick's around now. I haven't seen him this trip, but last time I saw him was L.A. In fact, we were jamming together down in Record Plant West, and we made quite a good track.
Every Sunday, we used to have jams, or they weren't really jams, but they were songs that we do at the Record Plant in Los Angeles. And I think, if I remember rightly, John used to sort of pay for the studio for the day. And there were these LA people that we all knew, like Jim Pelton was a drummer and so on. And there's a bunch of musicians, a lot of them are still around, you know. And people would go in on Sunday and they would cut a track or two. And I was happened to be in LA, and John invited me to come down, and we did this track, which was a soul sort of record, sort of R&B thing. I can't remember who did the original version. Anyway, we went in there and played me the song, and I just learned it one go, and I learned it because, I mean, I learned things very quickly like that. Wrote the words down, boom, and it was done, and just did it one take.
This is my mix that night, but that's the one you usually call the 7.5. I took it back to New York and made two better mixes. Jack Bruce is playing bass, as you'll hear. The mix sings it great.
Jimmy Cook will ever come out of this
thing? Well, it's really down to playing it to Mick. I don't even know if he heard it. And it's a matter of playing it to him. If he likes the mixes I've done, or he wants to mix it again, or he wants to mix it himself, and deciding to put it out. Sure. Wanted to go out, as God knows. I think it's worth it. Okay.
I always thought when I went back to these sessions that John was playing guitar on this, but he now and the engineer said, no, he wasn't playing guitar, he was producing. I said, okay, he was producing. But he was doing the encouraging role. You're great, you're fantastic, do it one more time, and that was done.
One, two, three, four. Sitting in the la la, waiting for the ya-ya. Sitting in the la la, waiting for the ya-ya. It may sound funny, but it's all right, honey. Hey, baby, worry, don't make me worry.
I was glad that John and Julian got together. It was great, and you know, he and at the end, you know, how much he looked forward to coming back to seeing his father again. That just warmed me up to know that I can make this happen. And it was a time that, you know, they needed to be together, and I knew they hadn't seen each other, and it was a perfect situation.
You know, Dad separated from Mum when I was like 3 or 4, maybe 5. So, he went off in another direction. I didn't see him much at all. And you know,
from
the only
3 or 4 years old.
Yeah, I maybe saw him 4, maybe 8 times at the most before his death. And so,
how old were you then?
17.
So in 14 years, you had 8 meetings with your dad.
Maybe a few more here and there, but it was few and far between.
Was it fatherly? Or?
It was difficult.
Yeah.
It was very difficult. And also seeing as he'd started a new life with Yoko and having another baby, Sean, the whole attention was directed over there. So, I mean, when Mum separated, all she asked for was clothes for my back, food for my stomach, and enough money to put me through school. So we grew up basically, not poor, but I mean, we weren't poor, but we weren't rich.
Not like
either.
You think John Sutton and son would grow up.
Oh, no. And it was very difficult for her and for me because the majority of people still today in the world believe that, you know, I've had millions since I was 3 years old.
If you would have asked me, I would have said that.
Yeah, and I've always worked for my own money. I've waited, I've done this, I've done that, and finally I took off with music. So, I mean, everything that I've done and my mother has done has purely come from our own hard work. I mean, I appreciated the man's music very much. I think he and the rest of the guys in the Beatles were phenomenal. But as a father, I don't have much respect for him at all, and as a person to some degree. I forgive him because obviously it must have been a very difficult and strange time, especially with the huge success just the diversity of moving around the world, meeting different creative people. So I understand it, but from a son's point of view, looking back to see where his father was, knowing he was around, but not communicating, was a difficult thing to deal with. And so I have a lot of, there is still some bitterness there, of course, but there is forgiveness also. And so it's very, as you were saying, it's very difficult when people come up to you and say, man, we love your father so much.
Yeah,
you know?
Shit.
And I'm going, you don't know the half of it. And I have to keep my cool. I have to, because they don't know any different, you know. And so it's okay. I'll deal with it. I've always dealt with it. I'm going to have to continue dealing with it.